Okay, we do this again. I started too early. Good morning, my good day, my profitable and lovely friends. How are you doing? How's the life going on? The week is almost over, and what's happening already there? I would say a very warm welcome. I'm so happy to be here with you. And let me begin with announcing that I also got the vlog, so you can no longer, you can only hear me, you can also look at me. So simply go to hofprofit.com and search it out. I will place a show note in the show note pages. There will be a link to the video of the interviews and the vlog channel on YouTube, and have a look and take it on. I would say so on that side it's great news. So now you got me on audio, on video, on text. The only thing that I need to do is get the interviews or get me on the telly and get the talk on the radio. And then I would have then I'm doing completely everything. So let's see, there are other things also working out. And if you want to sponsor it, simply leave me a message. So having it said, and we gonna have the show is fully loaded for today. I'm gonna talk with you about Winnie Mandela. This after this documentary, there is some interesting Bitcoin news. I have some news about my fights with the city of Eindhoven, and I'm gonna announce to you that I'm gonna interview Nick Hauber of NetWest Business, and he is a startup and business mentor about the power of a business plan. So you can simply submit your questions online or send me a tweet about it. I have a lovely interview with Vincent Evers about Bitcoin, cryptocurrencies, and we're gonna talk about DASA and the Dream Kids, which Obama launched an initiative for, and Trump simply killed the initiative. Trump simply said it's time for more common sense and normal laws. So, having it said, let's begin with Winnie Mandela. Winnie Mandela, the ex-wife of Nelson Mandela, the mass murderer who was glorified in the West. There was a documentary about her on the Dutch public television, and although that it's really leftist media, I must admit they are broadcasting those things, so that's really good, in my opinion at least. Winnie Mandela, said once, and that's why I simply think it's good that she is not in power, that the South African people should get its country back by burning the opposition alive in a car tire. You fill the car tire with gasoline, put some holes in it, a match with it, and burn. And that's basically how she thinks that she can work. If you then realize that one of her sons had HIV, she had a lot of affairs with people while she was married, then I'm just wondering. She is not faithful to her husband, she cannot protect her own kids from HIV. So what's happening? I mean, that's not really good in my opinion. And she is really, at least in the Netherlands, she is glorified as a great person, how good she is. So, and I'm simply saying it's not good enough. They should get more common sense in it. And I know it's, look, I don't say that the apartheid regime in South Africa was great. Don't get me wrong. But what happens now is nothing more than just a collapse proposed and planned by the United States. Because they got people with guerrilla tactics in power who are not capable of running a country. If you simply take into consideration that the government says that you need to have so many percentages of your staff should be black colored. Hey, I have a secret for you. That's called discrimination. Why not simply say we want you to have qualified staff, and we're gonna make sure that no matter what the color of a person is, they're gonna become qualified. But the Scandinavian energy company DONG has a few nuclear power plants in South Africa. The South African government wants to force them to have black people operating a nuclear power plant, and DONG simply says, yeah, we're gonna train them, but we wanna have qualified staff. And they have a dispute about this, and I'm just thinking, well, this is insane. They should have qualified staff. I mean, you're basically talking about a nuclear bomb, and you want to have people working with it who are not capable working with it. That's basically what the ANC government wants. Well, with that, definitely, I'm no longer really safe or happy in South Africa. But, well, let's face the fact, South Africa is just like Venezuela, a hellhole on earth. So, having that said, it's just, I think, time to have a quick talk about the other hellhole on earth, Eindhoven. As you know, I got a dispute with the city of Eindhoven on January 12th. They hold a big raid. They were trying to ask me questions, but I was not there where they were holding the raid. So that shows that the mayor had not sufficient data and was working the wrong way. And they were talking about a lot of things. They want to know a lot of things about me, like how I make my money, how much money I make. And here's a secret for you. If you want to know that from me, why not ask it to me? That's something that the city of Eindhoven did not do. So, and until now, different employees promised to do it and to simply ask me all the questions, but they are not asking it to me. I don't know what it is. Maybe that they are afraid of me. I don't know why they should be afraid of me. I don't eat humans. I never murdered. I never raped. I don't intend to murder. I don't intend to rape. I use my words and my fingers to type text as my weapons. So I don't think there's a big problem with it. But hey, maybe it is that I hold employees of the city of Eindhoven accountable for them, and I always announce everything with names, and they don't like those things, and I don't care about it. But they think about me at least, and I just try to win this battle with the city of Eindhoven. And in that context, you need to realize I asked the Elderman of Economics for an interview for the show. And that's just because in the city of Eindhoven there is a lot of potential that's unfulfilled. As I would say, there's a lot of low-hanging fruit. And the city is doing some things on the economic side really well, but there's also some big news. I mean, one of the biggest employers, NXP, is for sale. And hedge fund, Elliott, I think they are heroes because they got the Arcadine Marine on their knees. Is trying to get a better deal, so there is quite some things to talk about. And what's wrong with a good talk? I mean, I'm one of the biggest supporters of a great, good talk. Just talk is always better. Now, and with on my fight with the city of Eindhoven, the last things are that the neighbor guy, Arthur Spitz, he's called, said that at home we got leakage, he was sure about it, and that they went to the city and the city could not do nothing about it. Well, first of all, it's really interesting to see that the city tells to him that they could do nothing, but keeps bullying the family off. And with this announcement, it's just that I'm wondering, you are working with kids. Is this really the type of person that you want to be working with your kids? I mean, I just say, if he has a problem, and I know what his problem is. He want to buy the house for 50 to 70,000 euros. And that's it. And to give you an idea, in this street, buildings go between the 400 and 500,000 euros. So he want to make money and he's just trying to bully us away. So I just think that I will buy the house and shoo him away. It's just the better way to do it. But, and it's a pity. And to be clear, I'm going to publish everything in Dutch and English about it. And I will do a series of vlog interviews and it's going to be interesting. So that's all going to be nice. And then I think it's good for us to have a quick look at what's happening in the Bitcoin world, because there was great news. You can buy an apartment with Bitcoin in Dubai. Let me be clear, Dubai was on my list to visit once. Unfortunately, people with an Israeli passport are not allowed in. Yeah, I can be in the airport, but not at an hotel or whatever, so I don't think it's a smart move to go in. But I have to check that with the UAE embassy, and hey, it's only a town, I mean. So then the developer now says you can buy your apartment with Bitcoin, because a lot of people made money on Bitcoin. If you did not make money on Bitcoin, simply go to hofprofit.com/cryptoprofits, because you can join the profitable Bitcoin movement also. So that's really handy for you to know. And what we need to do and what they need to talk about is what's happening. I mean, Bitcoin is popular. There's a big bubble. Everyone talks Bitcoin, cryptocurrencies, blockchain, innovation, all those things. And I'm talking about a lot of those things in an interview with Vincent Evers. I will put later on in the show. And I will have put a lot of those in the report. And I'm going to put a lot of things out. And yes, I'm going to bring at least 15 different blockchain specialists and publicists about the topic on the show. Because I think it's really high value, good materials and nice things. So that's great. And this, yeah, well, look, if you like living in Dubai, if you like to have Sharia law, then it's a great country to live, I'm sure about. Don't get me wrong, I mean, I don't have a big problem with the government of Dubai. I mean, what the Sheikh is doing, I really admire what he is doing, because he got just big grab of sand, and he is evolving the economy from economy fueled by oil. It's now less than 20%. The country is doing great. I mean, on that side, okay, no one works there. He hires everyone to control the ventures of him. He simply hires people who know what they are doing. But that's a smart move. I mean, that's the way I would go for it. And it's interesting to see what's happening. And I mean, I think that Dubai will definitely become the regional business hub. And yeah, well, I will simply go for another market over there. And yeah, well, it's just interesting to see. Yeah, as I said earlier, Nick Howe is a banker. He works for NatWest, NatWest, or whatever you call it in English. It's a bank in United Kingdom, and he is working for where I know in the London area and southeast of England. And he is a mentor of startups and businesses. So he is the guy that helps companies succeed. And I'm going to talk to him about the power of a business plan, because a lot of people who start a company, they don't have a plan. They are doing something. And I am just thinking, it's maybe not a bad move to simply get the plan and plan your costs in advance, because what people forget, you can't control your turnover, but you can control your costs. I mean, that's why this webshop is profitable. It's really low cost. I mean, it costs me less than $20 a month. That's easily made. That's not a big thing. So that's just on that side. I would simply say that so you can submit your questions. You can do it on the site. You can do it whatever. It's all fine by me. And that's it. And then I think it's time for one of the two high points and the great points of the show. We're going to talk with Vincent. I recently had an interview with Vincent Evers. Vincent is a Dutch futurist. So he talks about the future, and he is really knowledgeable about Bitcoin and blockchain. He is a big admirer of Tesla, which I consider personally as a negative side about him. But hey, that's no problem. I mean, let's agree we disagree. And Tesla, I will not put money in it, but what the company is doing from an innovative perspective, innovations and changing the world, the company is definitely doing something right. So I'm really happy with that one. And well, I got a great interview with him, and I would simply say this is it, and here we go. Okay, Vincent, very well, welcome to the show. For our listeners, would you be so friendly to introduce yourself?
Sure, Lodewijk. I'm a trend watcher. I basically love new technologies and how they change the world. And that varies from everything from, you know, started with ICT, then I went to client server, then I went to internet, then I went to mobile, to big data, to artificial intelligence. And 5 years ago, I stumbled onto the cryptocurrencies, the bitcoins. And so I organized a conference in the blockchain arena and also with Bitcoin. So I like new technologies, and I love to see how it has influence on the world.
Okay, thank you. What is blockchain?
Yeah, well, blockchain is a wonderful new technology. I mean, blockchain goes back to 1995 when David Chaum in Amsterdam introduced DigiCash, and he was a fantastic guy, and he basically came up with a method to make digital money, and that you didn't have a double spending problem, that people could send money back and forth on the internet without a third party. So that was 1995 when it first appeared, and it's a combination of cryptocurrencies and open source software. And when then basically the Dutch Central Bank killed it. And all the central bank killed it, and of course the internet was not so popular at that moment. And then in 2008, then we had of course the big banking crisis, and Goldman Sachs, and I don't know, we had this 50% the stock market went down, and everybody thought, oh, this old system's going down. And then this Satoshi Nakamoto came up with this new and improved cryptocurrency idea, which was a decentralized ledger with cryptocurrency, open source, and nobody owns it. And wrote this paper in 2009. We got a new, 2009 was the paper and the first software. And now, of course, we have all this cryptocurrency. And the nicest thing is, it's a system which is decentralized. Everybody has a copy of the same information. It is now worth about 140 billion, and everybody tried to hack it. And that didn't work. So it's a system with built-in security, and also the openness. It's so open, everybody can hack it, but nobody has been able to do that. So it is a nice open source system without third parties, where people can transact, and they can transact money, they can transact contracts, they can transact everything from value. And at the moment, we have about 1,000 coins and all kinds of new initiatives. And it's a new way to get all this, to get the trust in society organized. So, and we see it growing. It's still extremely small, but we see it growing at a rapid rate.
And on the field that transparency, would you say that transparency and the way it works, especially that there's no government oversight engaged in it, it makes it a good or a bad move for criminals to use their money laundering operations?
Yeah, well, the blockchain, it depends on which blockchain you choose. If you take Monero, that is a blockchain which is very anonymous. But the blockchain of Bitcoin is extremely open. Extremely open. So first criminals thought they were totally protected, but it's, you know, it's if somebody knows your public key, then all the transactions can be checked. So it's really not a very fantastic system for criminals to use. And they are going to other ones than Bitcoin. So, but I mean, criminals are very smart, creative people, so they were one of the first to use it in a more systematic way. And it's, of course, a fantastic way to send money all over the world very quickly, with if the amount is a little bit more, then the costs are relatively modest. But I would say that the criminal activity on the blockchain, of the Bitcoin blockchain, we have about 350,000 transactions. It's a small minority. You know, it used to be that new techniques, criminals and sex would start to use it, and then the normal world takes over. And I think that happens the same with blockchain. It's actually, if the old banking system and the blockchain comes together, you know, on all these exchanges. It's extremely regulated. There's an incredible KYC project, Know Your Customer. If you want to buy Bitcoin everywhere all over the world, you have to identify yourself with passport, with your phone number, with your address, with your this, with your that. There's a huge amount of checking. So in a lot of countries, it's not so easy. Now, you can, of course, go to all kinds of special places where there are exchanges which are not so which are not checked so much, but I would say that there are no special blockchains for criminals or who want to stay anonymous, and I think that problem is going away rapidly.
So Bitcoin is not the go-to route for criminals, you say?
No, well, you have two different things. You have Bitcoin and blockchain. And of course, you have the Bitcoin blockchain, the Ethereum blockchain, and the Monaco blockchain. And there's now other blockchains which are much more secure and much more anonymous than the Bitcoin blockchain, because all the transactions are, you know, in the ledger which everybody can track. If I send you money, then you can just take you can see the number, my Bitcoin public address, you type it in into blockchain.info, you see exactly with who I do business. That is not a very anonymous system. So it's extremely open.
That's really a good thing. I mean, it increases trust and increases capacity. And how big is the cryptocurrency, Bitcoin and blockchain, compared to other things like the dollar, the euro, the pound sterling, the RMB?
Well, if we look at coinmarketcap.com, I can now show you my screen. And here's my screen. As you can see that. At the moment, the Bitcoin, all the Bitcoins together are worth about 65 billion. Ethereum is worth 29 billion. And Bitcoin Cash is 11 billion. So if you take those three together, they are about 100 billion. And the total value of all the Bitcoins, all the 500 coins together, is 140. So the top three Bitcoins, the top three cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin and Ethereum and Bitcoin Cash, are worth 100, and then totally 140. Now, if you want to compare that with the whole, you have a big love of gold.
Yes, and, gold is good.
Gold is good, well. I never owned an ounce of my life, but the total, the value of gold is 7,000 billion. So it's cryptocurrencies are now worth 2% of gold. All the gold together is two swimming pools. So it's also cryptocurrencies. If you want to have $1 billion in gold, or $1 billion in cryptocurrency. One is a memory stick, and the other one is already a huge amount. So it's a lot more practical to take a cryptocurrency. If you then take all the amount of cash in the world, all the banknotes and all the coins and everything, that is also about $6 trillion, 6,000 billion. If you look at the digital gold, it's about 100 trillion, so 100,000 billion. So it's 2% times divided by 100, so 0.002% of the digital. Then we have all the debts. That's about 200 trillion, and the derivatives is about 600 trillion dollars. So cryptocurrencies is at the moment 0.00000001% of all the money. It's nothing. It's absolutely totally nothing.
But it's a big thing in the media and in the world. Everyone talks about it.
People talk about it, but it's, it doesn't mean anything. We ain't seen nothing yet. It's also only, you know, just it started in 2009. And we're now talking about so it's 8 years old. So it's extremely young. But it is going up quite a bit in value. I mean, because if you looked at 1 year ago, the total value was maybe 40 billion, and the year before it was 4 billion, and it was so it's going up rapidly, and people are talking about it. And what you see is now much easier for people who have money, who have that real money or the old money. And if they want to buy cryptocurrencies, there's more and more exchanges coming, and there's more and more regulation coming, so that also there's funds coming. There's funds which invest in bitcoins, so that people can buy shares in that fund, or they can have them. They can just buy with their normal money. They can buy shares in a mutual fund, and then the amount of money which flows in is quite a bit. Every day we have about 2 billion euro of money flowing in and out. And there's more money. There's more money flowing in than money flowing out. That's why the exchange price goes up. That's why the price of Bitcoin goes up, because a lot more money goes in than out.
And where do you think that Bitcoin and blockchain will be over, let's say, 10 or 15 years?
Yeah. Well, there's a couple of things. At the moment, it is an investment or speculation hype. It used to be that it was used to transfer money internationally. I would say that's still happening. From the 330,000 transactions which are happening every day in Bitcoin and a little bit more in Ether, I would say that 90% at the moment is speculative. People buying and selling crypto because they want to make money out of the investment or speculation. But also people are spending money. For example, I buy mining equipment, and if I want to buy mining equipment in China, I just send bitcoins, and you know, in 2 seconds, now in 10 minutes later, my payment is confirmed. It's a really a handy way to do international payments, remittance. That people send money, who work in certain countries, go somewhere else. You can do that relatively cheap. Not if you send $2 or $5, but if you send $200. At the moment, it costs about $2 to send a payment all over the world. Now, if you send $500, that is a very efficient way, and within 15 minutes it arrives. And in the Ether, there's all kinds of smart contracts where it works in the energy sector, especially also the ICO, the initial coin offerings, where people make their own coin. So I would say that if you look in 10 years, a couple of things need to happen. First, the amount of transactions need to go up. So both for Bitcoin and Ethereum, which are the two leading platforms, we need to go from Bitcoin can do about 5 or 6 transactions a second. Mm-hmm. Well, to give you an idea, Visa does 2,000 transactions a second. And that needs to go up a factor of 100 or 1,000. And there's all kinds of systems coming both for Ethereum and Bitcoin to make that possible. And it needs to get more and if that happens, that the transactions amount go up and that the transaction fees go down, I think we're going to use it more as an international payment system, and later we can use it as a general payment system. And I think that is still 5 years away, but for international payment system, it is a very handy system. It can easily become from 140 billion to 1.4 trillion to 14 trillion. I mean, if it can easily become 100 times bigger. And then also people will get used to it and will start using it also to send money back and forth. Because it is a much more modern way than the old banking system with all kinds of very complicated system. In a normal bank, three people are doing the work. Like, they organize, they have the computers up and running, and they do hundreds of millions of transactions. And 1,000 people are testing if these people are doing their job right. If the trust, to organize the trust. Trust is already built into Bitcoin and Ethereum, all these blockchain systems. So it's a lot. It works a lot more modern. So all the banks are also using blockchain experiments to see, can we use that as the next level generation of the next generation IT system to organize our payment systems with.
And what is, in your opinion, the biggest negative side effect and the biggest risk for blockchain and the Bitcoin? As big as one.
Well, we can see that very well. For example, the Bitcoin. Bitcoin was, went up. Bitcoin was unknown, so it was very popular, and everybody started to use it. It went to $1,000, $1,200. Then China forbid it. Not a couple of other central banks forbid it. Went down to 250. Then it went up to 2,000. Then there was a quarrel in the software developers who created the Bitcoin and the miners. The miners are the ones who have all these distributed ledgers. And they had a big quarrel about how can we make the amount of transactions bigger in Bitcoin. And then the whole system got stuck for about a year. They were discussing and nobody was agreeing. It is a permission. The people have to agree. The community of Bitcoin has to agree what kind of next steps they're going to take. That is a messy process. It can easily break down, and then you have all kinds of groups who start their own Bitcoin, like we now have the Bitcoin and the Bitcoin Cash, and we have the Ethereum and the Ethereum Classic. Every time that the community doesn't agree and it splits in two, you have two coins. Everybody suddenly ends up with two coins. And there's two communities, and they have the same name, and they go their own way. So that is, at the moment, highly unstable. The governance system is quite a problem. If you then look, for example, the Ethereum, which is worth $30 billion, that's now based on a 23-year-old or 25-year-old Canadian guy who Bufara, what's his name? What's his name? Let me see. Oh yeah, here we have him. Vitalik Buterin. Vitalik Buterin, and he's the one who's the leader of Ethereum. And if he doesn't, and there was a rumor that he was dead, that he was in a car accident, and Ethereum went down with 20%. So it is a couple of people who organize, who are basically the people behind that, behind the software of this program. And if they don't agree, then it can be a big mess. But that, of course, doesn't matter. If Bitcoin goes down the drain, then Ethereum will take over. If Ethereum goes down the drain, Bitcoin Cash can take over, or you have, for example, NEM, or you have NEO. You have all kinds of different platforms. So one platform can come and go depending on how the governance is and how they can get all the technological challenges, if they can meet them. But in general, this kind of technology will be very popular. But the individual platforms can go down the drain if there's a quarrel and everybody basically gives up on it.
Okay. Thank you very much for your time.
Okay.
That's him. Kevin, u bent heel erg bedankt.
Ja, dat was 17 minuten. Je wou nog helemaal niet hebben.
En definitely you recognize the moment. It's time for the moment of the end of the show. It's time for the Trump moment. Yes, I know, it's a lovely moment. Donald J. Trump, the president of the United States, rocking the world and having something for us to talk about every show. He decided to cancel DASA, so no longer the Dreamer kids, the kids who were born in American soil from illegal aliens, are no longer receiving special protection. Obama launched the initiative and he said that the kids should have a home or feel safe. And Obama simply says that this is the way to go and it's a human way to go. And once again, it was one of the many terrible things Barack Hussein Obama did. Great politician, great leader, but the politics were really terrible. So it was time for some change and a movement to improve the world. And therefore there was this clear and easy solution. Just kill the policy, and so the policy is now killed. That means that their parents who are illegal there don't receive special protection. And to my and in my opinion, it makes total sense. And definitely, you will get now a lot of videos and audio online that and a lot of television scenes that parents of illegal parents are gonna be executed out of the country, their stay is being terminated, and they're gonna be kicked out. And if you look at what's happening with all the illegal aliens and all the crimes they're committing, then I'm just wondering about one thing. Why could this not be happened earlier? I mean, it's in my opinion not a bad move. I mean, okay, it's bad for the kids, but But on all the fight of the illegal aliens, there's always one question I ask everyone, and no one can give me a clear answer why it is. Why should you protect or reward people who violate the law and with this punish people who are waiting for and going the legal way? I once read an article about a guy from Mexico. He started in a border town in America a taco shop selling tacos. He was working for 6 years on the bureaucratic issues, but he got all the permits, he was setting up the company legally. No, you hear no one complaining about what he is doing. But you hear people complaining about illegal crossing the border, shooting at border patrol, murders, rapes, those things are things that people really don't like. I mean, and then you can say, yeah, well, you get a kid. I mean, if I would take it to me, I wouldn't mind living in the US, but for me, then the legal route would take me a lot of time and work, that's okay. If I would go for the illegal route, then would be simply flying to Mexico to a holiday resort, take the bus to America, get an American girl, get her pregnant, and you are basically covered. That should not be the real. That's not why you have human law. That's why you're not in the country of generosity. That's not what you need. What you definitely need is more people who are prepared to work the hell out, who are surviving financially, and who are simply obeying the law. And yes, that also means the laws that you don't like. And I know sometimes I don't make myself popular with this, especially not in Europe, but let's face the fact, there are so many problems. Unemployment is high. 1 in 5 people in the US is on food stamps. That cannot be right. I mean, it's insane. It's not working well. And then you need to do something. And if you get all those illegals out and their jobs could be taken in by legal aliens, that's great. I mean, that's what you need. I mean, you need less people on food stamps. You need more factories, more employment, less unemployment, less illegals. And I would be easy, let's say, just get all the DASA parents. You know what are? There are approximately a few 100,000 families. Well, you know better arrange the aircraft tickets and get them back to their home country. I would say, make it clear. Just make it clear and easy. It's really sorry for those kids, but also kick them out. They are there illegal, so just terminate them, get it out. There are plenty of aircraft, so you can. It's not that so hard to get it out. And but you see, people say that you are heartless, but it's just you need to say keep the law somewhere. And why should you reward them? They did something that's not allowed. Why reward them? I mean, I would say if you break the law, you punish them. If someone rapes someone, you don't say, hey, great job. You lock them up and you throw away the key and let them rot to hell. That's what you do with those people. Not giving them all types of rights and benefits and things. And yeah, it is sad. It is. I also have a heart and I think it's sorry, but it's not the fault of the government. It's not their fault that they are not obeying the law. They are doing things who are not allowed, and if you get a kid and you're there illegal, you know that this day will come. So I would simply say to the police, knock on the door and get them out and do it by daytime. Because don't be shy. So with that, we are going to the end of the show. And I would simply say, what do you think about it? You can send me a tweet. And definitely send me also a tweet about all your questions on why you need to have a business plan. And you can simply tweet it to @Lodewijkhof, and I look forward to hear back from you. And I will say cheers and talk to you tomorrow.